Would anyone like to share or ask anything about the meditation? Welcome to.
I want the images which see. Some of them are related to what. So some of the images which we see are related to what we do throughout the day based on those emotions. But there are some which are unexpected and come all of a sudden. So how do we make a meaning of that? I usually don't try to interpret, but
Memory is limitless. Whatever arises in a meditation is arising from memory, not the conscious finite memory, but the vast beyond that. So in meditation, we are allowing all that to arise. In the course of the day, we are busy. There's no time for any of this. When we meditate, we are just allowing whatever has to arise. That is why we may perhaps see something which is unexpected. And whatever arises is to be seen, acknowledged, and let go of. So this is really the gift of meditation, which we are giving ourselves, the gift of sitting in silence. Eyes are closed because that is a sense perception, externalized. So when we close it, we are shutting that out because there's too much external stimulation. Now we can't shut our ears, but eyes we can shut. We can't stop our breathing. So whatever we can do to assist the meditation, we do.
not trying to interpret it, just let it
There's no
acknowledge.
harm in interpreting it, but there's no point getting too involved in the interpretation. For one's own spiritual growth, understanding, there's no harm in trying to interpret it. And maybe what will happen over time, supposing you maintained a diary that today this I saw or this I felt, and you've maintained the diary for a month or 2 months or 3 months, when you look back at your notes, you may find some connections. Because this is a journey of unfolding, evolving, a very personal journey.
So can we expect a thoughtless state by meditating for maybe over the period of time? This was my first time. I was stuck in all like I can categorize like home related thoughts, work related thoughts. Then I thought I will leave these thoughts and come to something which will make me more concentrated. So I try to concentrate on some, say, spiritual place. And like recent event, like yesterday, I was watching the match, right? So some thoughts are related to that. So can I categorized in like three, four kinds of thoughts. But I was not able to come to a state where I say that I was completely thoughtless somewhere. I was not able to do that.
So that is, as I said, not the goal of meditation, at least this meditation, the thoughtless state. With meditation, what happens is involvement in the thought drops away. How does that happen? The witnessing presence is so strong. You just now said thoughts of cricket, thoughts of home, thoughts of work. Who was aware of all these thoughts? Who was that who was aware that in half an hour of meditation all these thoughts arose? Now, the wish is my mind should not be full of thoughts. But nobody can control what the next thought is going to be and when it is going to come. But what happens when I am not running away with that thought anymore? The thinking connected to the thought starts dissolving. When that thinking starts dissolving, I find that actually I am not having too many thoughts. There's a gap between the thoughts. That gap was filled by thinking about the previous thought, constant thinking. So there is a difference between thought and thinking. Thought arises in the moment, thinking stretches the thought in the duration of time. So it is not about replacing work thoughts and then home thoughts coming, replacing it with a spiritual place. You are superimposing one onto the other. A mountain of thoughts are being created by you in this case because you want to reach somewhere. So what was an original thought of work was not let alone. It was not left alone to be. That is what the mind does. Because the mind thinks I can do something to improve this meditation. So what can I do? I will replace the work thought with the home thought. Now that is also not working, so I will think of a spiritual place so my mind is calmed down. Because we are habituated to doing. What is the problem with the thought about work? Is there a problem if it just arises? It just arises and it goes. The only problem is the story I have created around that thought. And then I start thinking about it, which in any case I do in the waking state. So I continue doing what I habitually do in the waking state, even in my meditation. So next time, let's say I sit for meditation and something comes up which is troubling me, I just tell myself, for example, I relax and release. That's all. Without trying to get involved too much in not having those thoughts. It is far simpler than we think it is. Meditation is far simpler than we think it is. We think it is complicated. That is the mind thinking. Is that clear? Anything else?
Yes. I'm just trying to ask that whether it is going to be the next time or maybe many times when we do, will there be any difference or it will be the same thing?
That is the endeavor. Because by and by, with a routine meditation, the thinking mind starts quietening down. And when that happens with a regular practice, I find that my thinking mind starts quietening down even during the rest of the day. That is why we meditate, not as a practice of hafna and then it is disconnected from the rest of the day. The quality in meditation, which we touch in that silence, we find in the course of the rest of the day that quality is presenting itself. How? When something happens, I'm witnessing it. I'm no longer reacting to it like I used to, which was mostly unconscious. But because I have touched this quality of witnessing my thoughts and thinking, that starts permeating daily living. That calmness and peace in meditation brings itself to my day. So there is tremendous benefit in a regular practice. Now we use the word meditation. We can just call it simply sitting in silence. Because in this kind of meditation, there are no rules. No technique is given, like a japa to be recited or a particular visual of a deity to be seen all the time and concentrated on. None of that is applying in this meditation. So we can call it by any name. Also, what happens is if a particular time in the day is given for this, then the body naturally starts calibrating itself to get into that state even before you think you are getting into that state at that time.
Beyond the meditation, in my daily flow of the day, as you said, thought and thinking are two different things. So just wanted to understand, what is the right way to approach thinking?
That is what this entire teaching is about. Have you seen any videos or any read any books, or have you just come randomly?
I watch your YouTube videos pretty regularly.
So it is all about this one, right approach to thinking.
Okay. It's a layer to this. I'm asking this because the work which I do, there's a lot of thinking involved about solving problems, coming out with ideas.
That is the working mind. The working mind is a gift from God. God has given us a mind so we can apply it. That is very beautiful. So there is no right approach to that. The wrong approach is when that pristine purity of the working mind, what is the work you do?
Into leadership development. I work for a
company. Okay. So this work, when the working mind is fully engaged, it is the greatest gift you can give. The problem is if the thinking mind steps in, because the foundation of the thinking mind is doership. So when I start looking at individuals, responsible for doing things and being who they are and myself, then I start getting involved and my working mind goes into the thinking mind, which takes away from the working mind. So, for example, I am the head of a department in a company and I'm motivating the people below me. But one person is just not good enough. I have tried my best. I have pushed this person to the limits, but he or she is not giving me the results I had hoped for. Now, the person of understanding will realize this is this person's limited capacity. He will not blame that person. He will not tell that person you are not good enough for your job. Yes, he will keep pointing out that, look, you are not performing at the optimum and I'm guiding you. But beyond that, because the sense of doership has been understood, there will be no blame, hatred, malice, ill will, and so on about that particular person performing. Because the understanding is everyone has been given a blueprint, a set of capabilities, skills, and all we can do is motivate them to do their best. Whether that happens or not, based on my criteria, since I'm the senior, is God's will. So with this approach, my working mind stays all the time in its pristine purity. When this gets overlaid by thinking that people are doing things, there's no higher power guiding them, then I start getting troubled myself. It is amazing. The working mind is truly a gift. I met someone recently who is quite troubled, you could say, by any measure. The mind is troubled. And I had cut my finger. And one clumsy bandage was applied on it. So the doctor had told me on the phone, after half an hour, you remove it and just put a regular band-aid or two. So I was out of my home. This person was sitting with me. And I thought, oh, it's half an hour. So I carried those two band-aids and I said, can you please help me remove this and put those? So I just put my fingers like that. And the attention and care, I was mesmerized that this person was so much in the working mind mode, so delicate, so gentle, as if nothing else in the world was there besides applying the band-aid on my finger. And then I told her, I said, this degree of presence is clearly there. Now the invitation is, bring it to your problems. It was clearly there in action. That is the beauty of the working mind. You forget all your troubles when you're so focused on the task at hand. So those on a spiritual journey, for them it's an invitation. Now you look at what all is troubling you in your life. What are your thoughts about it? What are your thoughts about people, your thoughts about relationships? And look at all that in a new light, in the light of understanding why people do what they do, why people are the way they are. That is the beauty of the journey. And then the leader has the potential to arise from mere leadership to being a guide, being someone who can really transform lives beyond the mundane measures of success, progress, and so on and so forth.
Beautiful.
It is very beautiful. Recently, I met a therapist who is senior in his field. He came once or twice for satsangs, but he had questions which he felt could not be asked. Because he said, I have no one else to ask because I am at the top level, above my peers. I've been doing it for decades. And he is drawn to the spiritual journey for a long time. So I told him that you have been given the greatest gift, a therapist who is on a spiritual journey, who is looking beyond what the training is, what the experience as a therapist is, and wants to reach beyond that now. I said, that is really fascinating. So it is really just to even be interested in this subject is a gift from God. But it requires work. In that sense, it requires work, a constant contemplation. Luckily, I didn't go through that because I accepted my teacher's teachings immediately. But others who had a different kind of conditioning had to constantly see things happening in their lives through this way. So it took time. There was resistance, it took time. There was rejection of some concepts. Later on, there was acceptance. So depending on each one's destiny, it flows differently. But that earnestness and commitment, it does take till it is not required anymore, because that becomes the new way of seeing, the new way of dealing with people, and the new way of being. It's really beautiful is the right word. It is very beautiful. Ye sab sikhaya tha ki nahin?
Bahut kuch naya seekh rahe hain. Thank you so much.
You see,
this thinking mind and working mind, I wasn't clear this. Now I understood.
Thank you.
You know, I was thinking the other day. If we watch a movie, and in all movies, there's a hero and a villain, and they are played by actors. We never blame the actor playing the villain for being a villain, because we know he's an actor. But in our lives, we are very clear who are the villains.
Yes.
We are very clear.
Mm-hmm.
But it is everyone's experience. Any movie I see, it is only roles being played. Hero is being played, villain is being played. The one who is playing the role is not the role. That is just the first step. That now I have seen that everyone is playing a role. I still have to deal with what happens in my life. And I must take decisions. If someone is being a real villain to me, I have to decide what to do. Do I continue to be where I am and take whatever is coming that way? Do I have a choice? Do I go and report to someone? Do I walk away? I have to take a decision. That is what daily living is. But this time, because the understanding is there, that everyone is playing a role, I find my decisions are no longer personal or about getting back at people, revenge and so on. Now I find that rather than an unconscious reaction to the villain in my life, I'm responding. I think about it, my situation, and I still have to take a decision. And I take that decision. But that decision is now taken in the light of awareness, not in an unconscious, knee-jerk way. Because I'm no longer now focused on the individual doing something to me. I'm now focused on the situation at hand. And the situation at hand is I have someone in my life who is harming me in some way. That is all. So I've dropped the story about it. I've even dropped the need to play the victim in this case. And then I see how to proceed. Nothing else. That is it. Which means my thinking mind is no longer operating. I'm in working mind mode. My thinking mind is about he did this to me, she did this to me. Why did they do this? I didn't deserve this. What wrong have I done? What has God done to me? That is all the thinking mind. When this is finished, you are left with the working mind. So you find that you are more and more operating in the working mind through the course of the day. It's quite beautiful, because one day you'll realize, where did my thinking mind go? You feel it.
I want to achieve that.
It happens. It really happens. What needs to happen is the one who wants to achieve it needs to dissolve.
Yeah.
But that earnestness itself is enough. This teaching is the beginning of the end of the thinking mind. And that thinking mind is mostly in the dead past, especially if we are older in age, or in an imaginary future if we are younger in age. How things should have been and how they should be. That is the thinking mind.
Working mind is something we do or take some actions. Thinking mind is like we analyze it, right? So are we saying that we are trying to run away from thinking mind and try to do regularly what we are doing, just about that, and forget about thinking.
Mistake. I must analyze where I went wrong to know for myself, to gain experience, and not to repeat that mistake again, hopefully. Analyzing is fine. The thinking mind, as I said, is the mind based on doership which troubles me. For example, I am a famous doctor or famous businessman, very successful. And I feel that because I am a doer, I did everything, I am responsible for my success. So what happens? Pride and arrogance. Pride and arrogance based on doership. It is this pride and arrogance which is actually troubling me. It makes me suffer. Because then I start saying things and doing things standing on the principle of doership. And then I find I start not only suffering myself, but creating suffering for others. Pride and arrogance, guilt and shame on the opposite side, because I think I am the doer. And as I said, any thoughts which disturb my peace, we all know which thoughts disturb our peace. Those thoughts will be linked to doership. That is the foundation of the Bhagavad Gita. You cannot force the thinking mind to become quiet. That is going to be more frustrating. It is the seeing, when we are brought to a teaching, maybe this teaching, some other teaching, whatever it be, which starts unraveling and showing you a new way of looking at life, understanding life. So let that do the work. The nature of the mind is to produce thoughts. You know, for example, I watch a movie before sleeping and that's going to carry on in my dream state. That can happen because that is going into my consciousness. I know people who watch a lot of TV at night and then they wake up in the morning with a very troubled sleep because the content of the consciousness is absorbing all that. Some people are very sensitive by nature, so they get affected. Those who are not sensitive won't get affected that much. So what is the content of my consciousness during the course of the day is the question to be asked. And that is where I will know, am I at peace during the day or am I mostly troubled? In my mind, what brought you here today? Is it your first time? You come for the satsangs before?
Not here, from Pune, like a couple of
times. Ah, okay, yes. Yes. But your first time in... Mike, it's a bit warm.
Actually, first time in physical presence, but I've heard a lot of your online satsangs.
You are from Bombay?
Currently in Bombay, yeah. So, a lot of things. I actually been on a very, I can say, journey, spiritual journey from like 1999. I've been with a foundation. I'm a teacher of that foundation. But somewhere in between got a little sidetracked. And then I've been listening to a lot of Muji, Rupert, yours, and, you know, a lot of, and... But there have been a lot of struggle in terms of career. Like, I did a master's in spirituality, but after...
Wow, I didn't know there was such a thing.
In US, there was a... I'd come to know. So, I had an engineering, IIT, and then... So, externally, the world... my brother, everybody says, what are you doing? You left a job, went into spirituality.
Oh, you left your job?
In US, I left the job. I did a MA in spirituality, and then I was working with schools like Aurobindo and related to education and spirituality and things like that. But career wise, I've been struggling a lot. Like, I get a job, then I lose a job and things like that. And then I felt like, what should I do? Like, because what is the calling? So last few years I've been wondering. I've recently got a job. I emailed you many times, but I didn't get a reply. So I got a job recently, but I'm still wondering, what is the, like, can you comment on something like this kind of a if someone is struggling a little bit like me on this aspect of
on the work front, you mean?
Yeah. And then second is also something very little tragic happened. So one friend of mine is there, and he and I would have been here together because he also listens a lot. And but he passed away a few days back in a freak accident.
It was very sad to hear. I'm so sorry.
So he would have come today with me. So, like, again, it's I listen to your knowledge and the path which I'm following also, you know, acceptance, but so difficult. And my father had passed in June 19th on in 2020. That time also, like, it took me a year. Like, so death is very, you know, difficult.
I opened this book of yours as soon as I entered, and this page only opened at death. I was like, yeah, this. And I read this. I'll just end it.
Everyone's journey is a journey of loss, to lose in order to find who you truly are, to lose to find that which cannot be lost. And I
So coming to the work question, I have always maintained, because not only have I been pragmatic, but the parampara is a pragmatic parampara, that first get stable financially. Try your best. The spiritual journey is going to unfold in any case. If you need stability, then do get stable. Don't get distracted by the spiritual journey, especially if you are young. Now, whether you are not enjoying the work or you are not able to hold on to a particular job, that only you will know. Whether you're not competent enough or whether you're just not interested in it, all that you have to look at. Why is it not stable for me? Is it that my spiritual pursuit is hampering my focus at work? All these questions have to be asked. But my suggestion is that let that be your sadhana first, to understand what is happening at work. Why am I not staying in one job? Maybe it's something I have to look at. For example, am I upsetting all my colleagues? I'm just giving one example. That is why they don't like me having me in a particular job. These questions, I must take the time out and ask myself. Thereafter, I will have to do what I think I should do as far as my work is concerned, in the hope that I have a stable job. Now, eventually, if someone comes to me with an issue like this, I may know that ultimately, whether it is this person's destiny to have a stable job or not, is God's will. But for the person who is in the job, he or she has to work it out for themselves. It could be that someone is not at all good in any job, in which case such a person withdraws from that quality of life and then goes into a small town or an ashram or whatever. It could be. We don't know. But the first sadhana is this. Now, coming to the question on death. Death is the greatest teacher. It was for me as well. When I lost my father when I was 14, it was my greatest teacher. That sudden loss shakes up the system, because till then we find this world is permanent. There's permanency in the world. And our first encounter with death, especially when we are young, breaks that illusion. My God, this person is no more now. What happened? Here today, gone tomorrow. What I thought was something stable, continuous, has been ripped apart. A lot of fear has arisen. What is the value of life if things can go like this? The ego gets shaken up, and that is the start of the spiritual journey. So, someone who is on this path, let's say encounters the first death. Now we are talking of physical death of a loved one 5 years ago, and then another death after 5 years, right? Between those two deaths, you can see how your spiritual journey has unfolded. In what way? How have I responded to the second death vis-a-vis the first? If I find it's still taken me by surprise, anything sudden, its nature is to take you by surprise. But the processing of it, the understanding it, the mental turmoil after it has happened, where am I today? pain in the moment, grief in the moment, 100%. Loss of a loved one. But now what happens? I can see the hand of God was behind it. So I have not created a story out of this of suffering for myself. My suffering, which I would have extended into psychological suffering, is now restricted to grief in the moment. Very painful grief. And death is the most beautiful teacher. Because what starts happening is I start looking at the death of what is precious to me. What is precious to me means not what people are precious to me. That is one aspect. The actual death is the death of me and my story, me and my opinions and views about people, me and my condemnations and criticisms. That is the actual death. Why does death rattle me? Because the ego does not want to die. Death does not rattle you in deep sleep. In the waking state, the fear arises. Death is a very fearsome thought because I don't want to die. I don't want others to die. I don't want to die. So who is it that does not want to die? That we have to look at. If I will bring it down to a very silly level, if I have a view about something, whether it is a political party or whether it is, let's say, food. If I am a staunch vegetarian and I have a view about someone who's non-vegetarian, and I find that I'm getting into an argument and I'm trying to convince the other person that vegetarianism is the only way, it means I have been threatened by someone who has a view other than mine, and now I am trying to force and dominate and control the other with my view. I am afraid to die. It sounds absurd, but this is it. So what if someone has a different view? I have one view, they have one view. Yes, I can express myself by my points I have written down to show to the other. Perhaps they will see things the way I see them, but it's gone after that. So I have in this case died to my view on a particular subject, knowing that if everyone is made by God, if everyone has been given a set of conditioning by God, they all are thinking based on their conditioning and their nature, which God created. So whose view is right? Whose view is wrong? I have to see for myself, do I prefer being non-vegetarian or vegetarian, and leave the matter there. Now, you have seen two sudden deaths. Move forward in your life by 30 years, 40 years. You would have seen many more deaths of loved ones, right? Now, the gift of the spiritual journey is to reflect on all that. What did I learn? What did I understand? What about me? How prepared am I to die? What am I holding on to? Am I at peace? And perhaps more importantly, am I taking away other people's peace? Or do I have a live and let live approach to life? Otherwise, what will happen based on one's destiny is I will go through the journey of life. Each death which comes, which I have witnessed, will rattle me. I'll continue getting rattled if that is my destiny. And life will go on. Someone in whom this flame has been kindled, who comes for satsang, goes to any kind of spiritual program, that opportunity is now provided that look at your day, forget the rest of your life. Morning to evening, look at your day, what happened, the people you met, your thoughts and views and opinions, and now see where you refuse to die as far as you yourself are concerned. So when I literally see that it is the one source consciousness operating through anyone I encounter, when that is acknowledged, rather than seeing individuals doing something, a large part of the job is done because I am at peace.
Like you said, no, really this time we've been meditating since that day, every day, chanting and all. And there is, and he reads a lot of Nisargadatta Maharaj also. So in his room, all the books are there. So there's light, lot of light. And we've been meditating and chanting in that room only. So yeah.
That's beautiful. What is your name?
Ankur.
And where are you from originally?
Originally Mumbai, Santa.
Oh, I said, you said currently you're in Mumbai.
Currently again Mubai, originally also Mumbai. Santa Cruz. Now I'm currently in Mulund, but otherwise Santa Cruz.
You're welcome to come again.
I've been listening a lot. But first time you're in person. And my friend Vivek from Rishikesh had come few of satsangs back. He was sitting behind.
Interspecies communication. I saw it on your Instagram handle. Interspecies
communication.
Amazing. Look at human beings. We learn to speak and there are misunderstandings. Animals don't have to learn to speak.
Sir, I have just one question. So,
I would love to understand how this one can be trained in.
Okay.
It is something anyone could be trained in.
Yeah.
Animal communication.
Yes.
It's quite beautiful.
It's just between making the difference between your thinking mind and what is coming from the source. Regarding that particular animal and also from that animal, but it is anyways coming from the source.
So you teach me animal communication and I'll teach you human communication. Fair enough.
We want to be part of both.
So sir, when we talk about effort, if I want to start waking up early and if I'm struggling with it, I have never actually struggled with waking up early, but now I am struggling with it.
That's so strange, you know?
Yeah, like in my childhood, I used to wake up and get ready and go to the school because it was 6:30 school. So, but now I think there seems to be some block, which maybe I am saying something to myself when I wake up. Like previous night, I planned that I am going to wake up, even if I am, you know, late. And even if I'm sleeping late.
But with an alarm, right?
Yeah, with an alarm.
So then when the alarm rings,
I just give in and sleep again. So what should be the thought or any one statement? Like, you know, you just said right now that I'm willing to release, like something like that we can say to ourselves when we find ourselves in our thinking mind. So what do I tell myself in that particular moment when the alarm rings?
No, you see, there's a bit of confusion here. Let's say my nature is to wake up early. I'm an early morning person. Whether with alarm or without alarm is not the point. I like the morning hours. So I see to it that I wake up because I know it for myself. I know that I like the early morning, so I wake up early. Simple, right? Now, someone who has never woken up early and has an intent to wake up early will struggle. Because it's not been their nature to wake up early. So they are struggling with it. So they'll put the alarm, they'll go to sleep. That is fine. In your case, you said you used to wake up early and now you find that you're not able to. So you have to ask yourself that whatever were the reasons I woke up early for, are they still valid in my life or I am disregarding them? You will know the answer to that. So perhaps earlier, it was part of routine to wake up early. Now the routine does not demand it. So there's no need for you to wake up early. But if you liked waking up early, but you find you're unable to, then you have to ask yourself, why did I like waking up early? What were those qualities? And then you will come to know whether you really liked waking up early or not, whether you were just habituated to it. It could also be that your priorities have changed. So you no longer enjoy waking up early. So even that has to be honored because then you're operating on past guilt that I used to wake up early. Now I'm not, so I'm guilty.
Perhaps that's why I'm not waking up early. So every day I'm thinking, again, I slept, like, you know, I overslept.
And sometimes the body needs the sleep.
Yeah.
So you see, you just have to be honest with yourself, investigate it for yourself, and you'll get the answer. Now, with me, it's very peculiar. I have found that, and this I found even in my teenage years, whenever I also had very late nights, I was still getting up at the same time. And it was not about liking or not liking. It was like a default setting. So I didn't struggle with it. Like sometimes my friends make fun of me because Sunday mornings I wake up late. So they are saying, how can it be 6 days of the week you wake up early and only Sunday you wake up late? I said, I don't know. It is like that only. I don't overanalyze that. You see, so it depends what you like and what you like, you know. In my days in advertising, I used to work with nocturnal creatures, as they only said they were either vampires or bats in a past life, because they loved working in the night. So when I was waking up, they were going to sleep. It was very bizarre. So I would message them as soon as I woke up and they would say, oh, good night and all that. It was very, it was the opposite. But they loved the silence of the night. I loved the silence of the early morning. Different strokes for different folks. So that is why if someone says, let's travel early morning, I don't hesitate because it's not a discomfort to me. Others will panic. Don't wake me up so early, because that's their conditioning.
Can I ask one small? So when we were doing meditation, certain times it happened so that witnessing was happening. My thoughts were, but I was aware only after, like later on. So like, you know, some thought came up and I didn't even acknowledge it. I was not aware about it. But later on, I became, oh, this image just showed up. You know, later on, I seem to recognize it. So is that what we, like, do we realize that witnessing is happening later on, like after it has happened, or does it happen in the moment? Because if it happens in the moment, I still find some thinking mind to be there.
How can it be?
If I am sitting
in front of you,
yeah.
What is happening? I'm sitting in front of you, you're seeing me. It's not later on the image is coming that I was sitting in front of you. That is the experiencer stepping in.
Yeah.
And saying, I saw him sitting in front of me, but I'm still sitting in front of you. I'm always in front of you in this.
So when my eyes are closed and when witnessing is happening, maybe experiencer is later on jumping in and saying that, oh, this thought just came.
Yes, correct. Absolutely correct. Absolutely correct.
So the witness had uncomment, without a commentary.
Yes.
Yeah. So when the commentary happens, it's there when the experiencer just jumps in.
Yeah.
Takes the ownership.
Yeah. Witnessing is happening all the time. Because there's a witness to witness something, no? Otherwise you would be non-witnessing.
So that is why in deep sleep, we generally have nothing to comment because
nothing to witness.
And we struggle like, what is the experience of being in a deep sleep?
Yeah. Yeah. In deep sleep or in samadhi?
Yeah, exactly.
In samadhi, there's nothing to witness. While there's something to witness, witnessing is happening. But we have converted that witnessing to observing and judging. So for example, you have your likes and dislikes of how people are and should be, right? And you meet someone new. All that conditioning comes, what? This noisy fellow who talks too much, I don't like, right? So what was pure witnessing, because a person came in front of you, your conditioning, your views based on all that came to the fore, I don't like this person. So what was pure witnessing of someone who came to you became observing someone with certain traits which I judge. And that is based on doership. He is doing something deliberately. He is talking too much deliberately. Can anyone talk too much deliberately? Can anyone talk too less deliberately? So what was pure witnessing got hijacked, made impure through judging. Now what was pure witnessing is witnessed, person is met, person is acknowledged. I still have preferences, but there's no judgment arising. I may prefer the company of a quieter person than someone talking too much. So I take my decision, but because my guns are not trained on this person, I find I'm being very open and objective about it. I don't wish anyone in ill will for the way God has made them. I move on to another table or someone else in the party who I resonate with. And then when you start accepting everyone by and by for how God made them, you find you really have no preferences anymore. That also happens.
I have a question that everybody says we witness something, we saw something, and you judge it or whatever you think. But sometimes it has come and you just can't remember when you get up what it was. Something was there.
In a sense?
I mean, like just now when we did the meditation, I know there was something in my mind, but no matter how hard I think, I just can't remember what.
It's a great gift. You have a siddhi. Just shows how useless our thoughts are.
Yeah, because I just can't remember what. I mean, it's there, that something was there, but...
And that is actually what happens to the sage in daily living. It is nothing, it is, I'm telling you, you're developing, all of these people have powers now. Yeah? This one doesn't remember, this one's animal communication, what have you got? What have you, no? That really becomes the outlook in my day. I really don't, yeah. My teacher's book, one of the book's title was Who Cares? When that starts happening in daily living, then I know I have found my peace. Someone has said something nasty to you, who cares? Jaane do, let it be. Not holding on, not clinging. Then
that
I know.
Has become an attitude.
That means you are finding your peace. Sometimes it may get disturbed because of old relationships, old conditioning, old patterns. Of course, it is a gradual process. But that is a clear indication that I am on the journey of peace, equanimity, and calm. And that will be attested by people around you who start telling you something has changed. Then you know you are not fooling yourself.